say that this is my second visit to San Luis Obispo. The first time I was here, I was a statewide coordinator of educational opportunity programs working out of the chancellor's office. I have been away from that job for almost 4 years. And you picked a beautiful day for me to come back, and I'm pleased to be here.
Yes. The new governor in office, what is Governor Brown's attitude on budget for education this year?
It seems to vary. He appears to be very frugal when it comes to program expansion, qua program expansion. It is very necessary to convince him that the expansion is absolutely necessary. He is not very amenable to salary adjustments just on the basis of inflation. In those areas, we're having quite a bit of problem. Constructions, we're having a problem. In the areas of transition to higher education, we find he's very supportive. He's increased the educational opportunity budget. He is, I believe, going to be supportive of some measure of increase in early childhood education. So programmatically, we expect good support from him. At what level, we're not really sure. No one ever gets what they really ask for. But in terms of hard things like salaries, construction, just routine program increase, I think we're going to have a very hard time.
Superintendent Riles says that funds are apparently running out for fine arts education. And what is being done to prevent this or slow down?
Well, unfortunately, fine arts, like a number of other things, have been considered ancillary to the basic core of education, which is perceived by most people as reading, writing, arithmetic. And so that when the budget squeeze comes, the boards are forced to make some adjustment in their downward adjustment in their budget. Unfortunately, fine arts seem to be able to go before athletics. And what Riles recently said in San Diego, that he's looking forward to the day when cutting a fine arts program out of education will generate the same kind of public response and furor that extracurricular athletics does. Everywhere. Racism is something that is just inherent in all the machinations of this country where people are dealing with people. Some places it's more glaring than it is in others, but no place escapes. Even all black or all brown schools, we still have a biased curriculum that kids are forced to absorb and adopt as fact and truth. So a very short answer to your very penetrating question is everywhere.
Where is the problem most glaring in the state?
I really can't point to that, because even if you have a district where you have a half dozen schools, the problem may be more grave in one school than it is in maybe the other five. And we have 1,056 districts in the state of California. And so the problems are everywhere, and they seem to be calmed down in one place and fire up or flare up in another. if you're asking me where are we having rebellious activities based on discrimination, there are not nearly as many direct demonstrations against ethnic discrimination as there have been in the past. I think because there is relatively little leadership in the minority community, we find other kinds of expressions like vandalism and violence and dropouts and drugs and those kinds of things. Whereas if you recall back in 68, 69, and 70, there were all kinds of ethnic leaders and all kinds of constituent groups that were doing all kinds of confrontations, but they weren't tearing down the buildings. Well, not everywhere they were tearing down the buildings. Well, I don't think this is a plan afoot. It's something that's being discussed. For a long time, ethnic minorities, the old cliche, have been the last hired and the first fired. Higher education has been one of the most glaring culprits in this area, with very few minorities. I hate to think how few minorities there were on this campus when I started working for the state colleges in 68 before we had an EOP program. But this was students, but even the faculty represented the same thing. And certainly the administration, the higher you go, the worse it got. And for years now, several years now, there's been a strong effort afoot to develop and implement an affirmative action program which has dealt with minorities and women, but primarily minorities. I shouldn't say that. Women are becoming a more and more vocal element in this daily. And some positive things have been done. And now as enrollments drop in the public schools and higher education meets graver, more and more grave financial crises, then this old labor model called seniority rights is working in direct opposition to affirmative action. And if seniority rights were retained, then all of the affirmative action goes down the tubes, because the last hired would be the first fired, and in many instances these were the minority people that had addressed the affirmative action program. I don't think that it's going to be possible to arbitrarily select people with greater tenure, more tenure, and fire them or release them in order to retain the newly hired women and ethnic minorities. It may be possible to encourage early retirement as a possible solution to the economic crunch in which we now find ourselves.
Have you been able to look at the discrimination problem county by county in district?
No, because the discrimination problem is not. You can ask yourself how many minorities are hired in a particular county, but and what percentage of the total population or the total teaching population that represents, but that does not. Hiring is only one aspect of the of discrimination in our society. Oh no. No, it, you know, you don't, no teacher says, yes, I discriminated against that kid. And many kids, I'm sure, say that the reason I'm in trouble is a direct result of the ethnic bias of the teacher. You know, documenting that would be an impossible task, so that you could in fact count it after you documented it. I think that where you tend to have large numbers of ethnic minorities dropping out, or you have greater, more demonstrations caused by ethnic groups, where you have greater parent and community dissension about the school, that you can conclude some things, but verifying them so that you can count them would be impossible. No, there's been no change. The state administration, well, I shouldn't say there's been no change, but state administration had to do with the governor and his appointed staff. You will recall that Wilson was reelected in the primary, and so he is continuing his same staff. We have managed, because of some shifts in personnel in Sacramento, to snatch off a few guys that did have other jobs, and some of them are in very responsible positions, but I wouldn't say that there's been a change now. Change came when Wilson came in. After he made his change, he's kept his same crew. Racism, first, is a combination of those forces and ideologies that are enforced by a majority based on a mythical sort of concept that they are superior. Minorities can never be racist. The best they can be is a racist. That's a joke. There is nothing called a racy, okay? You might call it reverse discrimination.
But some people argue that, first in Florida, there's either an overt policy to keep minorities out, and then this change, some people say that there's a lack of jobs because there's a certain amount of quality that's
one of the most racist comments that one can make, and probably one of the most racist thoughts that one can have in their head, is the minute you begin to think about an ethnic minority, you begin to think inferior quality. And many people tie these two things together. The fact that you're going to hire a black PhD means that he's not going to be as qualified as a white PhD. And that in and of itself is a racist concept. There have been attempts, and attempts in the California State Universities and Colleges system, to upgrade some of America's ethnic minorities based on the fact that they have not had the same opportunity to develop in higher education that America's majority has had. They have given some, in some departments, given some of the minority teachers release time to go work on a PhD, and the other members of the department have covered for them and that kind of thing, in order to try to someday reach some level of parity in terms of the selection pool from which faculty and administrators are drawn. I don't see anything wrong with this. When I began working at UCLA in 1966, we had recruiters from medical school come to UCLA to find senior minority students that they could recruit into medical school, and it was ridiculous. If you don't ever get in as a freshman, you'll never get to be a senior. And if you never get to be a senior, you'll never get to get into medical school. And this was the kind of problem that we've had for years and years and years and still exists today. And to say that you're going to do something to overcome this, if you just now all of a sudden become fair and let all of the minorities in on the basis of their population distribution, their percentage population, because of what's been done for X number of hundred years, you will never reach parity. So you have to do something, overcompensate in order to reach some kind of reasonable goal within a reasonable time period. I don't find that troublesome since we have dealt with the other side of the coin for so many years. Well, there are a lot of misunderstandings. One of the problems and misunderstanding that we have is that some of the members of our public feel that this is an extremely expensive program because the students, where you have early childhood, you're required to have one adult for every 10 teachers. The feeling is abroad that we pay all of these people. We don't. Many of them are parent volunteers, high school students, etc. And so they think it's expensive. When you spread $40 million throughout the state of California, you haven't spent a lot of money. There are 4,500,000 students in the public schools in California, so we're talking about a drop in the bucket. Second misconception is that, well, I guess the second bias is there have been a lot of people just haven't liked Riles from the time he was in office, and this is his number one program. This is his top priority, and this is one way to get back at Dr. Riles. But in terms of the recent flack that was occurred in the legislature, the Department of Education provided an evaluation report on the first year accomplishments in early childhood education. As a matter of fact, we in the department were so pleased with the accomplishments that we were somewhat afraid to publish the results because we didn't feel it would be that they would be that good the second year. Students in early childhood education had gained 14 months reading in a 10-month period, and that's just phenomenal. So there was a rather modest and small report given to the legislature, and the legislature felt that they didn't have sufficient evidence to justify the expansion at the level that Dr. Riles was asking for expansion, and they complained that they didn't have enough evidence, statistical evidence, upon which to make this kind of judgment. It is my considered opinion that the legislature is forced to work within a very slim budget this year. We don't have state growth in the general fund that we've had in past years, and because they're forced to work with a very slim budget, they are attacking all programs and questioning whether or not the level of expansion that was originally requested is in fact reasonable. Well, Dr. Riles got excited and charged some people there with being armchair educators, some people who had never been in the public schools since they left, and they were now in position to make judgments about the programs that should go on. That made exciting news copy, and it was covered throughout the state. I think, finally, I'd like to say that there are some elements of education that are exemplified in early childhood that don't lend themselves to quantification. That is, you cannot attach a number and say this school has 89 and this school has 90. And one of the things that's, that is one of these elements, is the amount of enthusiasm that parents and community have about the school that they that their kids now attend. And we require an early childhood education, parent enthusiasm, parent participation, and parent involvement. And the evidence throughout the state is that it has a tremendous effect in terms of tying the school and the community together. Unfortunately, you can't weigh that and say that this has, and quantify it and take that to the legislature. All you can do is go to them and talk to them about the enthusiasm that you find out in the various communities. And that doesn't go over very well, but I think that's basic and necessary to element in education. I think we have the right position on that. It just takes a lot of fight. Well, I'm in pretty poor position to comment on that. I'm a member of the Board of Trustees of the Los Angeles Community Colleges, and we've never had a student on the board. I've never been in the majority, however, on that board. So anyway, let me say that we have had for a number of years a student on the State Board of Education who comments whenever he or she wishes, and fortunately, it has been our experience so far that these have been very capable students and have contributed very sensitively to the discussion and there at the State Board. I don't know to what extent it has swayed various board members, but they are at least represented there. And on the State College and University, State University and College system, there at the trustees meeting, they have a table for the student representatives, and generally, from observation, they've been able to talk during an open discussion period. I don't think they ought to have a vote, at least not at this point, until they're written into the state constitution that as trustees are, they're there for, 8 years? 8 years or 12 years, I've forgotten, I think it's 8. And there's certain obligations that go along with 8 years tenure on a board of trustees. And students compared to trustees are transients, you see. But there either should be students seated there with the trustees, or there should be a continuous open opportunity for them to provide input. But they do the same thing with the faculty senate. The students sit on one side and the faculty senate sits on the other, and they both have to raise their hand and plead for an opportunity to present. Well, if the trustees make other decisions than personnel decisions behind closed doors, I think that they are, that that's unwise. With boards of education, they're required by state law not to do that behind closed doors. I don't know that you can ever control the discussion that goes on in golf courses and cocktail lounges and so forth, where students may not be able to participate. But hopefully the trustees is an honorable group and is discussing those things which pertain to the colleges in open forums where students do have an opportunity to participate. My pleasure.
Oh, okay. Interview next.